We're good? All right. Okay. At this time, we have a speaker traveling all the way up from Ventura. Let's give Myra a big round of applause.
Myra, alcoholic. Welcome to all the newcomers, those of you who identified, and even if you didn't, oh, looks like that thing doesn't work. No. And happy birthday to all the birthday people. I'm a crier, and I was going to cry already, so I'm prepared, because I know. Yeah. Birthdays were confusing when I first got here. It's like, I didn't understand what was so exciting about that. But today, it's like, it is exciting. It is a testament that this program works. Like, it was not humanly possible for me to go any amount of time without drinking on my own. I tried it. It didn't work. So we'll talk about that in a minute. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'm the oldest of three. That's my time. I just figured that out. That's how I do stuff. I flail, I'm kind of goofy, and I get fired up, and I'm going to try really hard not to cuss. It might happen, but I'm just saying, you know, out of respect for the podium, that's part of it. So I'm the oldest of three in a single parent family. My dad left when I was three. My mom is an alcoholic. Most of my family is an alcoholic, so I relate to it's a family illness. However, I didn't know it was an illness until later. And I never saw my mom drink. I never saw her drink or do, but my aunts, I saw everybody else in my family drink and smoke pot and do all that stuff. And, but I saw the crazy. Our life was crazy. I went from kindergarten to 12th grade, I went to 11 schools. So I had no sense of security. I was already trying to fit in wherever I could, and sometimes it was like, why bother? We're just going to move. Or, you know, we didn't have all the social media and the way to stay connected, so it was like, I didn't try that hard sometimes because I knew we were going to leave. So I didn't have a lot of friends. And my mom got sober when I was 8. And her bottom is our childhood tragedy. You know, my trauma. We got put in foster homes, you know, stuff happened, you know, drama, drama, drama. And then we moved, because that's what we do. And but none of that stuff made me an alcoholic. It didn't make me an alcoholic, but the stuff that I experienced made me want to be invisible. It made me not want to be present. It made me not want to be who I was. I wanted to be anybody else, but not me, ever. And I didn't want to, I just wanted to fold up like a paper doll and just not, I didn't want to be here, but I was. And I tried to be that good kid so I could get that attention, you know, so I was like, I tried to be, do good in school. I played sports, like any sport, I played it. But she didn't come to the games. She didn't show up. I was that kid that was last to be picked up or somebody else had to take me home. And my coaches were my dad's best friends, and they'd always tell me, oh, you're just like your dad. And I'm like, I don't know that guy. I don't know him. And I was so angry. I was already so angry, and I haven't even taken a drink yet. I'm just pissed all the time. So my brother and sister, they're already doing drugs and smoking and stuff and, you know, carrying on and being hooligans and, you know, I sneak out of the house with my sister one night, and she's with her friends, and we've been where we live for a little bit. So, like, we have a group of friends. She has hers, I have mine, and we go to the park and hang out at the rec center at night outside because that's what you do when you're, like, 12 because that's the hot spot, you know. And they ask me if I want to smoke with them, and there they are. There's this group of people, and I'm right here. And that's how I felt all the time, just right here. I'm so close, but I'm not quite there. And I said yes that time. And it was the best time. It was so good. And we didn't do anything. We didn't go anywhere. We hung out at a park, you know? But I was like, oh, my God, this is it. And then I had a drink. And I did other stuff because it was easy to get, because it's really hard. You have to wait for a certain type of person stand outside a liquor store to get them to buy it. It takes a while. It's work. Or you have to steal it or whatever. It's work. So drugs are a little easier to get. But I did whatever I could to get that feeling again. I love the effect produced by alcohol. I love it. I could be not me. I could be whatever it was. It just, that sense of ease and comfort that I didn't have, that I always looked for, like, that was it. And I was in love. And I struggled, because I still wanted to be good. Like, I still thought I had to be this certain way to get what I thought I needed, but alcohol was like, come with me. And so I did. And I moved out of I ran away, moved out, whatever you want to call it, technicality. And I moved in with him because we were in love. It was love. It was, you guys. And he introduced me to other substances, to which he said, you cannot do any of these unless you're with me. And we spent all our time together. Because I wanted to do those things, and it didn't matter. So I was with him all the time. Like, you got it, y'all, let's do it. It's free, it's for me. That was my motto, I'll do it. But I had standards, you know. A few. But those slowly started to vanish. Like, I would never put anything up my nose. I would never, you know, I would never do this. And those lines, I continued to cross them a little bit at a time. And it was subtle. It was subtle. It just happened. You know, I didn't think I was going to do that, but I did. And as long as I could stay in that spot, that alcohol, that drugs gave me, that spot where I just, you know, that like twilight, you know, but I never stayed there. Like, I passed it all. I'm a blackout puker. I puke on a lot of people. A lot. It's not pretty at all. And you lose a lot of friends after a while. And you can't wear cute shoes, you know? You just can't. We had this thing, this girlfriend and I, when I was in junior high, my mom had this friend in the program, and we could only hang out with each other. His daughter and I could hang out because they were both, you know, our parents are sober. We did so much drinking. We would sneak out all the time. Like, she was amazing. I don't know how she did the stuff she did. Like, she would get up and play soccer after we'd be up all night in the hot sun. And I was like, dude, I'm dying. But we would always go out looking crappy so that when we came in looking crappy, it wasn't different, you know? So we had all these, you know, theories and rules and whatnot. But everybody knew. I was the only one who thought that, you know, I was pulling a fast one on everybody. So I'm with him and, you know, we're in love and stuff. And it gets bad. It's not, you know... It's one of those relationships that I had to run. It wasn't healthy in any way, but it didn't stop me from drinking, and it didn't stop me. It didn't sober me up or anything. It was, oh my gosh. It was like we broke up. Well, I can't say we broke up. I climbed out the second story window with a few belongings, and my friends were down the street. This is how this relationship ended. And we get in the car, and we drive off, and we're like drinking and smoking. And I'm like, woo, I'm free. And then I turned 21. I was like, yes. I'm living in Santa Barbara. I just turned 21, but I'm like afraid to go to the bars because he's older, a little, you know, he's already 21. So I'm like, I can't go out now because, you know, he's going to be looking for me. So we threw a party. Whatever. It was a costume party because anything to be not me and drink, awesome, I'll do it. So I'm sleeping in my car. It was a quick transition. So I'm sleeping. I climb out the window, and then I'm sleeping in my car. I have a Volvo station wagon, so it's roomy, you know. And I'm not that tall, so it's perfect. I have a job. Somehow I have a job. I show up for it all the time. I'm friends with one of the managers, so he would, like, unlock the back room sometimes, and I would sleep in the back room of the... Isn't it weird how you forget stuff? You're like, my God. that was, what a loser, you know. So I'm sleeping on the framing table of Aaron Brothers on State Street because it got too cold at the beach. And then, you know, when people come in the next day, they're like, what's all this sand all over the place? I'm like, I don't know, that's weird. But that's my life was exciting, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm an adult. I'm grown up and I can drink how I want to. But then I'd run home and cry to my mom about how horrible my life was and whose fault it was. And I'd always be crying about, like, what's wrong with me? Like, why is my life so hard? I'm dramatic, too. Why is it so hard? And she would leave pamphlets in the car, or a directory, you know? I'm like, It was pretty amazing how she did it. Or I might have been passed out sometime and she did it. Who knows? But I remember she's divorced. So that guy that she was married to at that time was my junior high school teacher. Not awesome. And he wasn't very nice. So that's part of what helped me move out. So they got divorced, and my mom got her own place, and she let me move back in with her. So I was like, all right, you know, I could do this. And she said, here are my rules, which I followed none of. I didn't pay rent. She asked me not to drink and drive. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I won't do that. And never. And I don't know, some other stuff. But I probably didn't do anything that she asked me because she didn't have follow-through. She never followed through with anything. And I knew I could get away with it. And so I did. And I took advantage of that. And she met someone, and they dated for a while. And I don't, my concept of time is a little foggy. I'm not really sure how long they dated. But they were going to move in together. And my mom says, we're moving, you know, on this day. And I was like, okay. And I don't know where I'd been for a while, but I showed up to, like, move my stuff. I was, like, all excited. And she said, we're moving. I don't know where you're going. Right? That's what I said. I was like, oh, what? Okay. And I was not happy about that at all. But she said, you could keep the car. I was like, okay, so now I have a Pontiac Tempest. It's roomy. Totally. Nice back, you know. I got some space. So I'm sleeping in this car now. And I, my friends quickly become that guy at the liquor store. I went to the same place every time. I didn't care. I knew I was an alcoholic, but as long as I didn't drink by myself, that was my major rule. As long as I didn't drink by myself, I'm okay, because I'm not going to be like her. I'm not going to do those things. Like, I'm not going to get married a bunch of times. I'm not going to choose. I'm just not going to be like her. So I was sleeping in my car, and my friend was that guy at the liquor store, the bouncer, and the bartender, right? Those are good friends to have. So I slept on the couch for this bartender, this bar downtown in Ventura. She was really nice, and she let me sleep on her couch for a while. And then finally I got a place, and I had two roommates. And they were guys, and they liked to party and stuff, but I thought it was kind of out of hand when they were telling me to shut up. They're like, you need to settle down. And I was like, well, I thought we were partying, you know? Like, come on. I had this problem, I had this other problem, where when I would drink, I would just, like, all of a sudden I had to be somewhere else. I have to go. I can't be wherever I am anymore, and it's not with you. Give me my shit. I got to go. And then I didn't even care if he gave me my stuff back. I just got to go. So I would leave. But I'd always invite people to my house and never be there. And I'd come home and be like, oh, my God, there's a party. It's awesome. And my roommates were not stoked. But I did that a lot. I would just wander off by myself, which is not a safe choice, you know. I'm not physically intimidating in any way. I'm not, you know. Whatever. It wasn't a safe choice. And I don't remember half of the stuff that I did, or how I got where I got, or where my car was, or where my ID was, or who this other person is. And how did I get here? And I God, I like to jump off stuff a lot too. So I would wake up hurt a lot. Like bruised ribs, stuff like that. My friends were like, my God, you were like, there was this bar that had this set of stairs. It was super, super long, and I always made it down the stairs, but as soon as I got to the bottom, it was over. I would fall all the time, or I'd jump on people's cars and like stomp around, jump off, like fall down, like just ridiculous. And it's, you know, nobody likes that. It's not cute. It's not funny. It's not entertaining in any way. I've seen other people do it, you know, since I've been sober, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. And that's me. That's what it looks like from this side. Yikes. So I have a lot of bruises. I looked battered, and I didn't eat a lot because I was busy drinking and doing other things, and I didn't have a lot of friends. Oh, my other way, but I did make a new friend because I had a car, and the drug dealer lived a couple doors down and needed a car. So I would loan him my car, and he would give me drugs. And I would sell them to my friends, and then I would get so loaded that I forgot that I sold them to them and tell them, wasn't it great, we got this for free? And they would be like, fuck you. It's like, damn it, I was so bad at that because I just get so wasted. And I was like, so they weren't my friends anymore either. Like, whatever. So my mom moves, I'm living in my car, you know, I have only a handful of friends that, you know, aren't really friends anyway, and I'm dating somebody, and I know that I need to stop drinking, but I don't know how, because I don't like the way that I feel, and I don't like the fact that I keep waking up. Like, I don't want to wake up anymore, and this, what I'm doing is so exhausting, and it's so that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Like, I didn't understand those words, but I know what that feels like. I know when I got here that I felt broken, and the things that I did to get what I needed to get by, I was ashamed, and I didn't want to live like that anymore. And I would pray. We believed in God. We, you know, my family is Catholic. We did a little stint with Jehovah's Witness. I got baptized Mormon. You know, I'm a Mormon right now. I don't go to church. I didn't know I was looking for something, and that was a struggle between some kind of spiritual life and alcohol. I always had that, and I thought already that I couldn't have a God in my life because of who I was and what I did. I didn't think that God would work for me. I didn't really understand that until I started working the steps. Because I didn't really think I had a problem, but I believed. But before I got sober, I was like, please, just don't let me wake up anymore. Don't let me do this anymore. I can't take my own life, but I don't want to live like this. I'm going to work wearing the same clothes I was wearing the night before, probably smelling like puke and whatever else, and, you know, whatever else. And I went to my mom's house again, and this time, oh my gosh, you guys. So I'm driving this Pontiac Tempest, I'm hanging out with some friends, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I have to leave. And so I go, drive down into Pierpont, and there are these narrow lanes where all these nice houses are at the beach, and I decide I don't want to go here anymore, because I don't know why, but I go to turn that Pontiac around in the middle of this lane, and I get it stuck on a fire hydrant, and yeah, I was like, what the hell? And this woman comes out, and it's, who knows what time it is, it's well after two, and this woman comes out, and she says, oh my God, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. And I realized she's as hammered as I am. And she says, do you have AAA? And I say, no. And she says, me neither. And then I'm like, like, we just sit there and look at each other for a second. So I'm like, well, I'll just see what happens if I like reverse and forward and reverse. And I finally somehow managed to get off the fire hydrant without ruining the fire hydrant. But it looks like a can opener was taken along the side of that car. So when I go to visit my mom, I have to park. Because, you know, that was tricky because it's still in her name. So I got to work it out just right so she can't see it from if she comes out. Like, no, I'll have to walk myself out of school. So I'm there one more time, and the car looks like that. And I leave, and there's another directory. And I'm like, but I'm not as, you know, I don't know. I remember being a kid in meetings, you know, with my mom and seeing everybody and everybody's drinking coffee and stuff. So I know where it is and I know kind of what it's about, but I don't want to be like her. I'm not going to be like her. So, you know, isn't it great to have more principle? You're like, I'm not going to do that. But anyway, so I'm at work. I have a job again, and I'm at like a little podium like this doing customer service, and everything that's going on in my life, like I just all the things that I drank to suppress, all those feelings that I did that I didn't want to feel or didn't want to be like or whatever it was like I just didn't want to be present. They were there anyway if I drank. I felt them all, and whatever I did, like it was there all the time. So I'm like this, can I help you? You know, I'm working customer service just like this, but crying more. And my bosses, they were so stoked. Anyway, so I had this directory, and I'm working in Port Hueneme, and there's like, I can catch the last half of the meeting. So I drive over there. Like, it wasn't my idea, and I'd already tried to not drink on my own. Not successful. I was not drinking for a little bit, but I was still smoking pot because I needed something to take the edge off. But I wasn't drinking, you know? I wasn't drinking. And I just wasn't. And I show up to this meeting, and it's the last half, so I don't have to identify. I'm good. I don't have to tell anybody. And then this woman's sharing about she got laid off, like, and everybody's like, I'm like, what? That is not funny to me. Like, all this stuff that was happening in her life that wasn't, it didn't sound like it was good stuff, but, you know, she was hopeful, and people were laughing, and she said, and I heard this, like, I heard people, but I heard this, like, I heard it right here, like, you were talking about making that journey, I heard it, and she said, you don't have to do this by yourself. You don't have to do this by yourself. And all you have to do is ask. See, that happens. So then I walk over to her, and I don't know why I did that. That wasn't my idea. So I walk over, and I say, I can't do it alone. And she stood in the parking lot for who knows how long, listen to me tell her about whose fault it was and how my life was a mess and I'm not responsible at all. It was a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings and whatnot, whatever. And she was just like, yes, sure. And she's like, hey, come to this other meeting. And we went to the downtown Alano Club in Ventura. And this one, there was a lot of stairs up there too. So I had to walk up all these stairs. I was like, oh, God. And I'm still crying. I'm crying because I was either crying or cussing. That's not that different. But the reason why I cry is different today. So I'm crying, and they say, are you in the right place? I'm like, I think so. And they say, you're going to wash ashtrays because you could smoke in meetings and stuff. And you're going to show up for this commitment, and this woman is going to be your sponsor. And I said, okay. Now, I wasn't stoked. Don't like, I wasn't like, hey, woo! It wasn't like that. I was like, okay, I can't believe I just did that, but I didn't have any. many other good ideas. I didn't want what I had anymore, and I tried other stuff and it didn't work. And so I thought, okay, I'll try this. I was 22, and nobody else looked 22, or close to 22. And they said, keep coming back. And nobody said that to me in a long time. Nobody asked me to come anywhere in a really long time. And so I did. And when I wasn't working, I spent all my time there. There was a lot of great people at the Alano Club, and it was a lot like this, a lot of rooms like this. And I didn't feel at home. Like, some people are like, oh, I feel like I was at home. And my idea of home was not, my idea was kind of crappy. So but this has become a home because I've made it that way, because I get to choose what's in my life today. I'm powerless over alcohol, and I didn't realize how unmanageable my life was until I got to that part of the step, because I didn't have anything. I didn't have a career. I didn't have anything close to looking like a career. I barely had a car. I didn't really have a place to live. And I didn't have any friends. So I didn't have all those things that all these adults had when I got there. And I was like, my life's fine. It's okay. Like you said, besides all that other stuff, I'm good, you know? Like, I'm about to die, but I'm all right, you know? I'm doing okay. And I wasn't. I didn't realize how unmanageable my life had become with alcohol. And so I came to, work with a woman. And I'm not sure, time is weird. And I know I've lived it. I know I've lived the length of time that I've been sober, because I'm present most of the time. And most of the time I want to be. I don't want to miss anything. I was a sleepwalker, especially drinking, and most of it was because I was in a blackout, but I was okay with that, because I didn't want to be present, you know? It's not like that today. So somewhere in my fourth step, and I don't know how long I took to get there, but I think I was dragging my feet, I'm going to say, and my sponsor got loaded, and that lit a fire, and I finished my fourth step, and then I was like, well, what now, because I don't have a sponsor, and I had one other woman. I didn't trust a lot of women. I wasn't trustworthy either, but I didn't trust a lot of you. I didn't trust any of you, actually. It didn't matter if you were a man or a woman. I didn't trust you guys. I wasn't really sure. There was a couple of you. I was like, creepy. I don't know. But this is the only place I can go. And I showed up anyway. But, you come to love us in our own special way. And it's true. So I asked this woman who lived in my building. And we went to meetings together, would you do a fifth step with me? Because it says in the book about doing it with someone that you trust. And if you go to them and say, this is a life and death errand, mm-hmm. Maybe they can help you out. Some other words, but prettier than I just said it. But it has to be someone you trust. And I had one, and that's all I needed. And we did it. And I worked with her for a little bit, and then I started going to another group, and I asked this other woman if she would be my sponsor, and we met one time, and then I never saw her again. And I was like, look, okay. And then I asked another person if, I was like, well, I'm going to check people out for a little bit. I'm going to watch people. And so then I asked this other lady who I like her. I'm going to ask her. And she said, I'll be your friend, but I won't sponsor you. And I was like, I don't need a friend. I need a sponsor. I think I said a little more colorful than that to her. Because I was like, whoa, hey, I thought you guys just said yes to those things. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, what am I going to do? Then I met someone else. And this time, I'll just say, like, I was sponsor dating her. I was like, we'd meet, I'm like, hey, do you want to go to coffee? You know, whatever. Like, and we hung out from time to time, and I would call her and do all these things. And then one day I was like, hey, you know, would you be my sponsor? She's like, I thought that's what we were doing already. And I was like, okay, good, because I was worried. So she's still my sponsor now. But that was tough, you know. It was scary, but I knew I didn't want to go back to what I had. And so I asked. I did it anyway. And don't quit, you know. Don't quit before the miracle happens. And maybe those people weren't supposed to be my sponsor for whatever reason. I don't know. But that's how it worked out for me. So, sobriety. Oh, my gosh. It's super exciting. And eventful, mostly because I remember a lot of it. But like the first, I don't know how long. So I'm mean and not very approachable, and I'm okay with that because I have these ideas that I shouldn't cry. I don't want you to see that I'm weak and vulnerable, and I don't want to be taken advantage of. So I'm gonna pull a fast one on you first. That's why I gotta get it done first for you to do it to me. And so I kept a lot of people at arm's length. I wish I had longer arms, but I kept you like just outside if I could. And there were only a few people that I felt that I could talk to, and so I did. And I did a lot of stuff in sobriety. That, you know, I met him again, you know, a different him, but it was him. And we dated or whatever. I don't even know what dating is. It's just all this texting and whatever. Anyway, so that's another, I'll write about that later. But anyway, so we date. And he disappears. Like, he doesn't even break up with me, he just doesn't show up anywhere. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay. And some other stuff happened with that. Some other stuff happened. And I chose to, I didn't drink surrounding some of these events. But I behaved badly, very badly. And I used other things to fix my feelings. But it wasn't alcohol. I smoked more. I did other stuff that was, you know, not very ladylike. And I didn't know how to be ladylike yet. That was questionable at times, too, but more so than not now. And I lost my job. All around the same time, and the gal that I was living with, her and her boyfriend were going to move in together, and so they asked me to move out. So, like, all this stuff happened about the same time, and I didn't leave my house a lot, and remember when you, like, had a video time or you movie rentals where you actually went and rented a movie? Like, I had, like, an over $100 late fee because I didn't do anything. Like, I couldn't get out of the house, and if I made it to a meeting, I was in my pajamas. And that was the best I could do. I didn't drink, and I made it out of the house in my pajamas to a meeting. And I don't know how long I did that until some people said, take a shower and get dressed. And I said, okay. And I did, and they said, you're going to meet us here. We're going to do something outside of your house. And I said, okay. And then I saw him at a meeting, and I told my sponsor, I'm never going to that. Again and then, and she's like, you're going to that one every week. You are going every week. And I was like, that was not, I thought you were on my side. And she was, because I can go to any meeting no matter what. This is my, I have a seat in any room, anywhere I go. And don't ever let anybody keep you from a meeting, ever. Now, safety is an issue. Well, that's something different. But, you know what I mean? Just because he showed up, I was like, I'm not doing that. So I went every week, and guess what? He stopped coming. So that happened. So then, I wasn't very stoked with people. And I had met another friend who was close in age and had some time in sobriety, and he said, come to this convention. And it was the Young People's Convention. It was in San Francisco, and it was New Year's. And a group of us went, and we weren't all young, but we were young at heart, you know. And that was our thing. And we all went, and I got to see. A convention is amazing to see that many people in one place who are sober. Everybody has different experiences, different lengths of sobriety, but we're all together. We're all together staying sober in the same place. And to hear the prayer at the end with so many voices is amazing. And it's the feeling. And if you don't know the words or you don't understand the words, know the feeling. That feeling is just like, it's this joy that I can't even put into words, that it's overwhelming to know that I am not alone ever, ever. Whew. Oh, I better wrap this up. Okay, so stuff happens. I move to LA, meet another boyfriend, whatever. I move back to Ventura. I help do a committee to host the Young Persons AA convention in our area, and it was so much work, and it was so much fun, and it was so rewarding to be able to be of service and to give a little bit back. That was given to me, like that responsibility statement. When anyone anywhere reaches out, I want the hand of AA to always be there, and I got to do that for a little bit of time in that place. It was like 2007, however long that was. Forget math. So that was 2007. I moved back to Ventura, and I date somebody else, and we're, my dating history sounds horrible now that I'm saying it out loud. So anyway, he decides, we live together, we're together for like 4 years, and all of a sudden he decides that his life is boring, and he just gets loaded. And he goes on this speed run, and he's hanging out with this other woman, but, you know, we're not sleeping together because she's ugly. And I'm like, you're doing drugs. Anyway, I can't even go into that. So I say, you know, we don't want the same things anymore. Maybe we should just break up. So I move out. God, that was rough. So I move out, and, you know, I saw him. Loaded, and I hadn't been that close to anybody loaded in a long time, and the insanity was terrifying to see him peeking out the windows, you know, all that. So like talking about, did you hear that? I'm like, oh my God, no, there's nothing. Just stay inside. Like, I don't want you to get arrested. Just stay inside, please. But, you know, that was a 12-step call for me, you know. I do know where he is right now because he's using my name on credit applications. So that was 2010. I was like, give it up, bro. So that took a little work to work through. And you know, so the one thing when I got sober that I thought I could never, and I've like stayed sober through some stuff, you know, but I was like, I better get more tissue out. If my grandfather, oh, I got it on this side already too. If my grandfather ever dies, I don't know. Like he's it. He's everything. And, in April, we got a call that he was found outside the boarding care facility that we just put him in for dementia, like, I don't know, a month or two prior, he's out on the street a quarter mile from the house with a broken neck and a dislocated shoulder and a broken arm, and he went into the hospital by himself. Eight days later, he died. And I was at the hospital every day. And if I was drunk, I wouldn't be there. And I'm, as hard as it is, as heartbreaking as it is, I'm so grateful because it is a gift that I was able to be present every day that he was in the hospital. I was able to have a job that I could come back to because I've been gainfully employed at the same place for 6 years because I know how to suit up and show up. Because I know how to suit up and show up for a meeting 1 hour at a time, I went back to school and got a college education to which I am paying a student loan back. But still, I did it. I didn't think it was possible. All those things I didn't think were possible, that I couldn't do this. I couldn't do this. This was not possible. I am not good enough. I do not deserve this. All those things, I've crossed those lines too. I got an education. I did it. One class at a time. Then maybe two. You know, my grandfather, he's in the hospital. I'm driving. Oh, I'll tell you how long I'm sober in a minute, too. So I'm driving back home from the hospital, and I pass this bowling alley that they just remodeled, and it's all pretty and shiny. It has a bar, and the windows are all open. And I like bartenders, you know. And and it's all twinkly and stuff, and I think, I'll just go sit at the bar and talk. The bartender, I don't know if it's a him, but he's so understanding, you know, because bartenders really know what they just know. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go to that speaker meeting. There's a young people's speaker meeting from where that bowling alley is to my house. So I drive there, and I walk in there, and guess what? It's not a speaker meeting. The speaker didn't show up, so now it's a discussion meeting, and there's like seven of us. That's a lot of time for seven people. So I was like, haha, God, you're funny. So I'll share about it and how I was just going to almost go to a bar. Now I got sober in 95. And I've been sober since 95. It's not that different. Every day is a new day. And that day I thought about, that bartender is going to be really nice to me because I'm having a hard day. But I haven't needed to drink. I don't need to. And if I did, who knows? Well, I do know what would happen. I do. And who knows what else after that. And I don't want that, you know. I can't even put into words either of the gifts that I've received in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm employable. That stuff's cool, whatever. The stuff that is really like, yeah, I got a car and I fucking drove here. Damn it, that was so close. So close. But I have stuff, you know, because I've, you know, been reliable and dependable at a job. But the things that I have that were so amazing to me is like, today I feel tall, and it's mostly because I walk with my head up. And I can look you in the eye. I feel okay in my own skin today, more often than not. Some days I have those moments where I'm like, I'm crazy in the head too, and I'm like, and I can talk to somebody else, and they're like, haha, that's funny. Or, because it sounds really good in here, but then once I get it out, either on paper or to somebody else, it was like, that is really ridiculous. And it's not that good of an idea. And my, it's those little thoughts, you know, those little, that small, quiet voice, that's the good idea. Not the one where I'm like, and then, and what if, and when that, you know what I mean? Like, that's not it. That is not how it works. You know, but today I have an understanding, I have a concept of a higher power, and I know that he's working in my life, and I've traded him in. And I've upgraded and I've changed because my concept has changed the longer I stay sober. And I know It talks about in the book that, and I love the chapter We Agnostics, that it says you can have a concept, however inadequate, is sufficient to make a start. So just believe. I just believed in something that wasn't me. It wasn't me. What a relief. I don't have to be right. I don't have to be perfect. I just have to be and not drink today. Just today. Oh, see, that's that feeling. That's that feeling. I was like, I always wanted that. And I don't need alcohol to give that to me today. I don't know. I feel truly blessed. And thank you so much for asking me to be here and share your birthdays and your maybe your first meeting or your first few meetings. Like, stay. Come back. Just stay. I didn't have a pink cloud. Let me just tell you that if you couldn't tell already. I didn't have a pink cloud. But it gets different. It gets different. And sometimes, you know, it's the seemingly good and the seemingly bad, and I never know which one is which. And like even with the passing of my grandfather, as horrible that as that is, and as the grief process is difficult, I feel that it's transformative. I don't even know how to say, like, I feel like my heart has been broken open so that I can just say, you know what, enough, and I get to be that person that I always wanted to be, because it is too short. I don't know when it's going to be. I thought he was going to live forever because he was supposed to, but he doesn't. We don't. And that's okay. But to know that I have this much grief means that I know that much love. And I didn't know that for anybody, not even myself. I know how to get stuff for myself before I got here, but I didn't know how to give and freely until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you.
Let's thank Myra again. Come on.